Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You are now tuned into anything potable. The most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital. Like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through.
So welcome to... Boston Celtics Podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan. And the one cracking that beverage, it's a Coca-Cola, ladies and gentlemen. Don't worry, we wouldn't drink a podcast ever. That's El Nino himself, the kid, the god, the legend, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic. We are coming to you just about midnight after the Celtics dropped game one to the Miami Heat, 123-116. Don't fret, though. They won three quarters. They won three of four quarters. Just so happens.
You sound like Doc Rivers. Analytically, they won three quarters.
It's absolutely loser talk. It was loser talk when Ime said it last year. Said the exact same thing. Not the greatest from Joe Mazzulla saying it this year. You want to know why? Because the third quarter, some would call it the most important quarter in this game, in which the Celtics lost 46-25. They started that quarter, I believe, up 10. They had a lead of, I think, 12 at some point, and then ended the quarter down 12. The third quarter, let me say, was not good. And I think it's a combination of two things. One, absolutely horrendous transition defense. There's some situations in which Kevin Love had a pretty good outlet pass. Bam Adebayo had a pretty good outlet pass. There's just a bunch of situations where the Heat got out in transition. I think they went on a 9-0 run based upon that to get themselves back into that game. And then they hit some ridiculous shots. I rewatched the third quarter during the press conferences. I counted five. I would call them absurd shots. I'm not saying that that's like the be-all, end-all, but that's the reason why they put
Which one were the absurd shots?
Bam Adebayo with a scooping lefty layup or righty layup that went basically all the way over the backboard. Both Struce threes.
The Struce threes were tough.
The two Struce threes were incredibly tough. The Gabe Vincent fall-away mid-range jump shot in the lane. And then I forget the fifth one. Caleb Martin, I think, hit a three in which, okay, four absurd shots. But the shot making generally by the Heat in the third quarter was abnormally, they did an abnormal good job.
It was incandescent?
I would say it was incandescent.
Is that a good word for this situation? I'm not really sure what that means, but I think it might fit.
I feel like incandescent has something to do with light bulbs and lights.
Yeah, incandescent means the bright ones, right?
I mean, we gotta Google incandescent right now.
We are Googling incandescent.
Well, okay. While I Google that, let me give us your impression of what happened in the third quarter.
I just thought the Celtics were lax. Honestly, I didn't think it started in the third quarter. Joe Mazzulla thought it did. I thought it started before that. Like Jimmy Butler walked into two wide open mid-range jumpers because Robert Williams was just sitting back and not even trying to make things difficult for him at all right away. Like that was one of the two of the first things that happened in the game. Bam Adebayo gets to the hoop for some easy buckets right away. Like that is immediately what happened. And it just felt like from the start, the Celtics didn't have the intensity level that they did in game six, in game seven, when they were on the ropes. It felt almost like the Jason Tatum has talked about game one of the Milwaukee series before, last year's Milwaukee series. And he said basically it was a totally new type of series and they just weren't ready for it. Like after playing Brooklyn, they just were not ready for Milwaukee. And Philadelphia plays so slow and they play isolation and they're stagnant. And if you can break up their little pick and roll game, like there's not much else to their offense a lot of the time. And the Heat make you guard stuff. Kyle Lowry was zipping up the court in transition and pulling up for threes. Max Strus is coming off screens. Duncan Robinson's coming off screens. Jimmy is, you know, coming off staggered screens to try to isolate against Malcolm Brogdon or whoever. Peyton Pritchard, we'll talk about his minutes soon. So there's just a lot you have to guard and a lot you have to think about. And it's just a totally different series. I didn't think they adjusted well to it. I asked Joe Mazzulla how they adjusted to it. He thought it was fine in the first half, but it just felt to me like they never reached the level of discipline and commitment you need to reach to guard a team that makes you guard more than Philadelphia did.
I generally agree. I don't think their defense was phenomenal tonight. I do think they clearly had the issues on transition defense in the third quarter. I actually thought they did.
And the second quarter, too. Like, Kyle Lowry came up and popped it over to Kevin Love, who just walked into a three. There was a bunch of Kyle Lowry shots where it was like, right after the Heat got it, he was going into his shot or his pass, like, just early attacks. And it wasn't all the time, but it felt like the Celtics got caught sleeping just far too often.
I do think they played, like, pretty good defense in the fourth quarter. They only let the Heat score 20 points. This is another big issue why they lost. They got they immediately come out and start the fourth quarter, 7-0 run, get it down to 5. They got it back up to 5 a couple times. Jimmy Butler did what Jimmy Butler does and hit some pretty tough shots there. They get it back down to 5 with about 4 minutes left, and they think they get 4 or 5 stops in a row, but their offensive execution was not great. Jalen, I think, rushed a 3. Al rushed a 3. Tatum had 2 kind of traveling violations.
I thought Al's was a pretty good look.
I thought they also got some decent like chances in the mid-range there with like shots that Jalen and Jason Tatum normally knock down, but they didn't knock down. I thought they generally like – the thing that's interesting about the Heat is the Heat, you're right, they did some very good things. There's like a lot of movement, but they also had some very dog shit offensive possessions where the Celtics, I thought, just did a pretty good job. I feel like they forced a lot of bad shots and 24-second violations. The Heat are just followed some of those up with then, like, immediately with double driving kicks that end up with a Gabe Vincent or Caleb Martin 3. And so I thought the Celtics did a pretty – they're obviously terrible in the third quarter in terms of their offensive execution, that leading to bad transition. But, like, I didn't come away from this game being, like, they have no chance. I didn't come away from this game being like, I mean, them losing game one was fairly obvious.
A tale as old as time.
Everyone knew they were going to lose game one.
They still should not have lost game one. After the first half, Marcus Smart, 10 assists.
Well, the Heat adjust. That was another thing. After the game, they're like, Marcus, what did the Heat do in the second half that was different? They stopped playing the bullshit zone that the Celtics figured out. Like, they didn't play, but like, I feel like a possession of zone in the second half and like forced the Celtics to play more straight up and just beat guys one on one. That felt like a major adjustment. And Marcus was just like, nope, they just were playing more physical. It's like, no, the Celtics did a very good job, I think, of figuring out the zone and like playing. And Marcus like put on a clinic in the first half, especially the end of that second quarter where he was just. He had 10 assists there, and I thought he put on a master class. I think the Heat did a good job. It was like, all right, you're going to have to beat us one-on-one, and I just don't think the Celtics did a good job of executing just beating one-on-one, but I thought, like, the opportunities were there. They certainly were attacking Gabe Vincent. Eventually, they had to take Kyle Lowry off the court because I felt like they were attacking him as well. I don't know. I thought the Celtics obviously not the result they wanted, obviously not the process in terms of getting back on transition, but I do think the fact that Miami, I think Pina tweeted this out, like their expected field goal percentage based on their, like their shot quality was 42%, and their effective field goal percentage, what they actually hit was 62%. Like, they hit a bunch of shots that I just don't think is, like, indicative of who the Miami Heat are. Caveat, they've been outshooting what they did the entire regular season for this entire postseason. But to me, it was like they hit a bunch of shots, shot crazy from three, made more than 15 threes, and the Celtics played terribly, especially in that third quarter, and still had a way to make it close in the end. So to me, people are freaking out right now and being like, this is the horrendous, horrendous loss. It's like, no, this is what happens when the Celtics play the Heat in game one, coming off of game seven. We all knew this was coming. Everyone just needs to relax.
It's almost the same thing that happened in the third quarter last year.
In game one?
Yeah.
I don't remember enough, but I'll take your word for it.
He had a 39-14 third quarter last year.
That sounds exactly like the script. The script has already been written.
I felt like that one was more offensive, just shit. Sorry, Grandy. I'm going to say sorry, Grandy, after every swear now from here forward. But
Hold on. Can I just pause you right there?
Yes.
Incandescent means emitting light as a result of being heated. Two, full of strong emotion and passionate. So you say the Heat...
It was a passionate and...
The Heat shooting was incandescent. It was emitting light as a result of being heated. I don't know if it was full of...
It was an extremely passionate third quarter. Incandescent as fuck. Sorry, Grandy. I guess incandescent's not really the word choice there.
It felt right, though.
It felt like that was it. It wasn't.
It wasn't at all. Swing and a miss.
I don't even remember what I was speaking about, but the...
comparisons to last year's first quarter.
Last year's third quarter, it felt like that was just mostly turnovers, whereas this third quarter was like, just thought it was more on the defense. They had some bad turnovers that led to Heat stuff, but it wasn't like the Celtics of old where they were just coughing it up time after time after time, and the Heat were just going the other way for layups most of the time. The last possession of the third quarter was abominable.
Is that the Brogdon?
Yeah. What was he doing?
I rewatched that one multiple times.
What was he doing?
That's bad recognition from him. He was on Zeller, right? Zeller was his man. Al Horford helps to the middle, and then he's going to gets caught in between. Obviously, the read is Caleb Martin.
No, it was Max Strus in the corner. It wasn't even Caleb Martin. It was Max Strus
in the corner. Shooter in the corner versus a Zeller. You probably close out to the sugar. Obviously, that was a mistake. But
that was a brain dead mistake. That was so bad. It's like, why are you trying to take away Cody Zeller and leaving Max Strus?
I don't open think he knew corner? That Mal Horford was leaving Max Strus wide open in the corner.
Why would he ever? Like, they weren't switching. They weren't going to have Al Horford switch off.
Watch the possession.
I saw it. Al Horford went underneath the hoop. Because he was helping off Cody Zeller.
No, he was helping off Max Strus in the corner, and Malcolm Brogdon was on Cody Zeller, and then he had to make the adjustments.
Clearly, the read was that Brogdon was still supposed to be guarding Strus. It had to be. And Al looked at Brogdon like, what are you doing? Why are you shading toward the guy who hasn't hit a three since April 28th, 2021? Yes, I looked it up.
That's an incandescent performance from you.
That is just a awful decision. Even if the communication was awful, even if he had thought they switched, you still read, oh, I'm guarding Max Strus in the corner now because Cody Zeller, we don't give a shit about him. That was really bad.
I'm returning to positivity and optimism. This game and series is going to come down to not the starting lineups. You remove, I think, Robert Williams from that and put Malcolm Brogdon in for the Celtics. You remove Kevin Love and put Caleb Martin in for it. I feel like those two lineups, the Celtics were better than the Heat in those moments. And it feels like this series is going to come down to those two groups of five in nut crunching time. And it feels like The Celtics did a very good job of closing out the second quarter with that lineup. They did a very good, or a better job of playing defense against the Heat with those lineups on the court. I don't think this is a double big series. I just don't think the Celtics have enough. They talked a lot about spacing and that being one of their issues in the third quarter. Their spacing is just never going to be good when they have two bigs. And I just felt like the team was much more, like it didn't hurt them terribly on defense when Malcolm Brogdon was in the game. I actually thought there was one possession in the second quarter where Jimmy Butler just took it right to Malcolm Brogdon and then really didn't go back to that for a lot of the rest of the game. But I thought just like the spacing and the Celtics' ability to attack and what they could do, and it seemed like they were just very comfortable switching everything. You mentioned the mistakes Robert Williams was making. He was a game what? Game low, minus 14 tonight? Like he, I just like.
And he had a bunch of offensive rebounds. Yeah.
He was very impactful in the first half, but I just didn't think.
He had an efficient scoring line, but it just was not a classic Robert Williams defensive performance at all. At all. He was like almost hesitant, it felt like, to guard guy. I don't know what it was. Like he was just laying back like he was a Enes Kanter or something. Like you are a super freaky athletic fast twitch machine. You should not be just laying off it totally off in switches. Like press up, get help. And maybe that was a game plan. Like just don't foul Jimmy Butler. Make him take contested shots, but he wasn't even contested. He was literally just laying back, and guys knew that he was not going to contest them. And it's like, you're Robert Williams. The what makes you great is putting the fear of God into people and making them rethink every plan they've ever had offensively. And he did very little of that. I thought that was as unimpactful as he's been defensively probably all playoffs.
And so I think if he's giving you that, you can't have him and Al Horford on the court at the same time. Like they're just not going to generate enough offensive look and spacing that wise. Because Bam can play completely off him and become that help defender. And I think, like...
That said, the Celtics scored 40 points in the paint in the first half.
Yeah, I thought, but a lot of that scoring came when they went to that smaller lineup and were able to stretch out the Heat and like figure out the zone a little bit. Obviously, there's like some lobs. That lob at the end, Marcus Smart threw on the Spain pick and roll.
Yeah, that was nice.
That was pretty badass. But I do think just the Celtics' offensive approach was just that much better when they had single big on the court, specifically when it was Al Horford. Robert Williams was like, everyone else on the team was positive in the first half. He was a minus five. Like, I just don't think his minutes were at all productive on either end. And I think they're going to continue starting him because clearly the team is ecstatic when he's in the game. But I think they're going to quickly get to smaller lineups. All right, we're here. Payne Pritchard minutes. People online are furious. Here's what I'll say. Do I understand Payne Pritchard playing this game? No, I do not. Did they lose because Payne Pritchard's minutes? Absolutely not. I can have both those beliefs in my head. That, like, I probably would have gone to someone like Grant Williams if you're going to talk about, like, them needing to have more physicality. But like the fact that Peyton Pritchard was in the game, and I just didn't think it had a huge impact on the outcome of this game. Jimmy Butler beat him a couple, like two or three possessions. Oh my God. Celebrity death match. You remember this?
Nope.
Claymation. Okay. Sorry. I got distracted, but give me your thoughts on Peyton Pritchard.
It was just weird. Like why? Why?
Why did... Okay, here's another thing. You're gonna get angry at me for this because I'm going to criticize the media and I myself didn't ask a question. Why during Joe Mazzulla's press conference did no one ask him about Peyton Pritchard and instead eight different media members asked, what happened there in the third quarter, Joe? Why did you guys suck?
he seemed to want to talk about the third quarter, would be my guess. And once he started like really harping on it,
people he didn't want to take it. Everyone wanted to say, everyone asked the same question four or five times in a row. It's like, but why did you let go of the rope? And not one person asked why he decided to play Peyton Pritchard. Hand up, that's on me. I could have raised my hand.
I would say the reason it wasn't asked tonight was because it was inconsequential to the game, pretty much.
So coming back to my original point, people are furious online because of Peyton Pritchard, but he had nothing to do with the outcome of this game.
Yeah, yeah, that would be my take on it. So a lot of the time when a decision, even if it's a strange or interesting decision, a lot of the time if it's not consequential, then we'll just ask tomorrow. But that was weird. It was interesting.
It's very weird to like, why Pritchard and not, if you just want shooting, Hauser? Like, Pritchard didn't really handle the ball. It feels like if you're gonna, like, there's only so much Pritchard can do on defense. Like, both Pritchard and Hauser are, I guess, defensive liabilities or people you can target, but at least Hauser has some size and can, like, engage in a kind of switch everything defense. Or switch more things than Pritchard can. It was just a bizarre choice. It feels like the obvious choice here is if you want physicality to go with Grant Williams, where if you want like to play two bigs with him and Al Horford or him and Robert Williams, at least he's a guy who can spot up in the corner and provide you some sort of spacing and that physicality. It feels like he's the option here if you want to kind of expand the bench depth and play eight guys. I agree it's a crazy decision, but I also just don't think it had any impact on the game.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at. Like, and even when he got switched on to Jimmy Butler, it wasn't like those possessions were disasters for the Celtics. Jimmy hit one super tough shot over the top of his head. Maybe Jimmy didn't feel like it was tough but like he was right there, contested it really well. I didn't have like some huge issue with anything Peyton did. The only reason why it seemed so strange to me was because
The Celtics are bigger than the Heat and feel like they have an advantage physically just because the Heat run out Strus, Gabe Vincent, Kyle Lowry. They're all like very tough players who are willing to get in there and take a charge, but like I think that one of the Celtics' advantages in the series is just sheer like size and physicality. Grant is one of those guys who can play physical and be one of those big bodies. But not necessarily, I do not want Grant taking the ball off the dribble, but like I just don't see where the advantage Pritchard comes in.
Yeah. I mean, that was my take on it. Obviously, you know, my guess would be that they'll eventually get to a seven-man rotation in this series, but right now just don't want to do that minutes-wise this early in the series.
Do you think it was a purely a guard thing? Like, they played seven guys in Game 6 and Game 7. The two guys off the bench were Brogdon and White. Like, they just needed another guard out there to kind of, like, spell the minutes of the guys who, like Brogdon, White, Smart, just...
They played so many guards, they needed another one? I don't know.
they played some, like, yes, it does. It's like those guys are tired, so we need another guard out there to kind of, like, give them a rest. Is the only kind of thing rationalization that can make sense for the Pritchard minutes.
My guess would be that Miami's second unit has a lot of guys who can attack you off the dribble. And Hauser and Grant Williams are clearly not as good at defending, staying in front of guys as Peyton Pritchard is. And if Hauser can be good at staying in front of guys, but he's also, like, if you throw him on Jimmy Butler, he may be more dog food than Peyton Pritchard because he's just not ready for that type of physicality a lot of the time. So that would be my guess. But yeah, we'll find out more tomorrow when we asked Joe Mazzulla about that one. That was...
What'd you think of...
Weird.
Bam Adebayo tonight? Because I thought he was...
He was aggressive.
Very good and aggressive. He went out there. Especially in the first half.
They had Jalen on him a lot.
That was weird to me where they, when they did have single big Robert Williams in the game, they would put him on Kevin Love and have Jalen guard Bam. I thought Bam just was like played aggressively and was like, I'm larger than him. He got Jason Tatum on a switch and took it right to the lane and got fouled on that. I just thought that was like an interesting
That almost decision. Felt like just handing Bam points. Like, why? Why? They saw last year that Bam had a lot of trouble even generating shots against their size, and then they just put less size on him? I don't know. Doesn't seem brilliant to me.
I thought he was very good for the first three quarters. Again, I guess I was like the Celtics defense. I just thought they did a much better job in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
they let up 20 points. They were a lot more physical. The Heat stopped making ridiculous shots. They were only 3 of 7 from three in that quarter. Like, I just thought offense couldn't execute to get them over the hump to get them like over that 5-point margin. But like, I do feel like the Celtics have the answer or a answer within them and have the ability to slow down the Heat. And if they can just one, score consistently so they can defend in the half court and just not turn the ball over. It's the same. We're watching the same series as last year. It's just like force the Heat to play half court offense and you should win the basketball game.
Although the half court offense for the Heat was really good today.
It was really good because they hit absurd shots. They were 20% more than the expected field goal percentage because they got 12 threes from Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin, and Kyle Lowry.
Strus is a very good shooter. Kyle Lowry is a very good shooter. Caleb Martin has grown a lot as a shooter. And Gabe Vincent sometimes hits shots.
So we should just expect them to hit 12 threes per game moving forward?
The thing is, you have to guard those. They're all capable. They haven't shot well this season. The Heat as a team did not shoot well this season. Even last round, they did not shoot well. But they have a number of capable shooters on their team. And that goes back to the first half. I just felt like they just weren't sharp enough defensively in the first half. And they were really good offensively. And that seems to happen sometimes to the Celtics where it's like, they think things are going to come easy, and it ain't easy. Like, you still have to stay committed to defense, and if you don't, then the Max Struces and Gabe Vincents and Caleb Martins of the world will give you trouble.
They hit a lot of shots.
But I also felt like there until the fourth quarter and really like the last 8 or 9 minutes maybe of the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's the exact time, but later in the fourth quarter, for a while there, they were just exchanging buckets. But I thought Al Horford's defense was really great late. He made some nice plays against Jimmy Butler to force him into some tough shots. You can't get to that point. And then I just thought the Celtics offense just forced stuff late. They were like Tatum was just trying to go really, I don't know. He had a weird fourth quarter.
He had a weird fourth quarter because he did a good job of getting to the free throw line. But other than that, not
the
much.
The turnovers were killer.
The two travels in a row were not great.
They were killer. I don't know I didn't get a replay of the second one.
Where he tried to dribble it?
Yeah. But
it looked fine to me across the court, 9 floors up. From my vantage point, a completely unbiased viewpoint, I thought he got away with it. But you know what? I'm not Ed Malloy, whoever the hell was.
Yeah, but his pass to Jimmy Butler and then Horford's pass to Jimmy Butler, and that's why you can't play a close game against the Heat because you never know when Jimmy Butler is going to just do shit like that.
And Jimmy was solid tonight. Jimmy did Jimmy stuff.
He was really good.
He's a pretty solid basketball player. Turns out, if you're playing the Miami Heat in the playoffs, you got to play full 48 minutes. Now, if you had asked me that before game one, I would have told you the same thing. If you asked me who's going to win game one, which I believe we talked about, It was always going to be the Miami Heat. It's just like, this series is going seven. We all know what's going seven. The Celtics are going to like come out in game two with a lot more discipline, play 48 minutes. The Heat are going to not shoot as well, and the Celtics are going to win by like 12 to 15, and everyone's going to be like, see, this is what happens. It's just, I don't know. I like, obviously, would I prefer them to win? Yes, but like them losing game one of this series, coming off of game seven where like teams are I think like 30 and 50 in the game one following a game seven win, this is just not at all surprising to me. And obviously there's things they can improve, but it's not like the doom and gloom I'm seeing on Twitter that's immediately Joe Mazzulla has to be fired. I'm sure if we went back to game one of last year's series, there'd be just as many tweets, if not more, about how Ime needed to be fired. And maybe by that point, Ime did need to be fired, but for a whole sorts of different reasons. But like, I think people just get very pumped and jacked and maybe a little too incandescent, if we're being honest about it, during the playoffs. And they start going off about Peyton Pritchard minutes or Joe Mazzulla not calling a timeout. Maybe Joe Mazzulla should have called a timeout during the giving up the first 3 minutes of the third quarter. But then they played a very like kind of back and forth quarter for, and then they gave up another run for the final 2 minutes of the third quarter. Like, I don't know. The game stopped a number of times between them, and they played like assholes to start the third quarter, and they played like assholes to end the third quarter. The stopping in play doesn't just magically fix their effort or decision making or things like that. Like,
he had a great clipboard toss.
Ooh, I didn't see that. When that happened?
That's a good question. I didn't see when it happened. I just saw it circulating on Twitter.
It was a clip of it.
Yeah, it was a solid clipboard toss. I would say, honestly, maybe it wasn't a. It was more like a 4 out of 10. It wasn't like a clipboard smash. It was more like a what the fuck, guys. Sorry, Grandy.
Do you have any more basketball observations from this game?
Not really. The ease with which the Celtics got to the hoop in the first half was wild.
Do you think we see zone again from the Heat, or do you think the Celtics proved that they could kind of figure it out and deal with it? There was like a few possessions where it didn't feel like they knew exactly what they're doing, but as soon as they, I think, got smart into the game and like just his ability as kind of like a role man or like to be the guy in the middle of the zone and make decisions there, I think it's just pretty impressive. And I think the Celtics did not, like last year, they couldn't deal with the zone at all, and it just led to a bunch of turnovers and bad decisions. This year, I felt like they...
What was Cody Zeller? He played 9 minutes, right?
Yeah, and they were not great. Like, that's the other thing. The Heat bench was not very good. Cody Zeller played 9 minutes, was a minus six. Kyle Lowry was a minus 11 in 28 minutes.
He had a great first half, though.
He did. He knocked down three threes, and he came out quick with, like, I think it was 13 points.
And then only 29 three-point attempts for the Celtics. And part of that was they just got to the hoop so much. But it just felt like, especially in the second half, like, they weren't spraying the ball around. There wasn't the same ball movement. They had the same offensive purpose that they played with in the first half.
But they when they did get threes, Marcus Smart got a lot of available threes in that start of that first half, and he missed two of them. And then I think that's like where some of the bad transition plays happened. But you're right. Like, Jason Tatum only took three threes tonight.
Yeah, that's
which
I mean,
is
that's
kind of shocking
rare.
Because normally he's up at like 8-9 a game.
He's averaging 9-something in the playoffs.
And I actually expected them to shoot more threes, especially against a zone. Actually, I've been down on Derek White.
He had a really good game offensively.
3 of 5 was aggressive. Actually, he got another bucket, like driving to the paint. I actually thought him and Brogdon were all right. But again, I do think the Celtics need to go smaller, need to like they need to play the kind of Joe Mazzulla style basketball where it's just like spread the floor, drive, kick, and just shoot as many threes as possible. And like, I feel like they kind of got away from that, especially in the second half where they just couldn't, and especially in the fourth quarter where they just couldn't really generate a good look. I thought the Heat did a good job of like, of switching, which obviously hurts like them. And it felt like they just went kind of hunting for Gabe Vincent or Kyle Lowry who is in the game, but kind of the closing lineup was just like, let's kind of try to find Gabe Vincent. And then after that, their process just kind of feels rushed because the Heat did a good job of slowing them down.
Yeah. And look,
that doesn't make sense. It was rushed because the Heat slowed them down. Maybe they slowed them down so much that they had to rush later in the shot clock. Okay. I figured it out.
I was an incandescent point. They need to find a way to generate more threes. They missed some timely free throws tonight, too. And they didn't have a ton of free throw misses, but it felt like everyone was in a pretty important moment. Malcolm Brogdon had one in the fourth
that he missed. Would have cut it to three.
Jalen had one after an and one that he missed. There were just like a few free throws that could have been important points that they just left out there.
That's true.
Stool Greeny is probably pissed.
He's furious.
That
guy hates more than a missed free throw.
Guarantee he was tweeting about it.
Oh, yeah. All right, can we pivot to junk?
Yeah.
What do you think about Joe Mazzulla allegedly watching The Town four times a day and then making
sweatshirts? Four times a week.
It's four times a week?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense, but still.
It would be impossible, you sicko.
I definitely just misread it every single time. I read the whole, like,
there's no way.
Nesson wrote an article about it, GQ wrote an article.
There's no way he actually watched it four times a week.
That's what I'm saying. He says all sorts of crazy things. That's why I dug up the tweet from Marathon Day where he asked if how long it would take him to run a marathon. He'd just say, I'm going to run till I die. Like, what a creep. He says all sorts of kooky things, and it's everything's crazy if you remember it.
I kind of believe him he would run till he died, though.
That's more believable than watching The Town four times a day or a week. But what do you think about them making t-shirts? Hold on. Let's just ask, what's your opinion on the movie The Town?
The Town's a very good movie.
It's like a B-plus movie.
It's not a great movie, but it's very good. But I watch it, like,
yeah.
I don't want to watch it consistently.
I
watch it every once in a while.
Weekly viewing totals of The Town. Oh, you say what you average?
I certainly not once a week.
I would say I'm like a once a year, maybe a biannual viewing.
Yeah,
I think I've seen The Town or three times.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible Boston accent from who's the broad in that?
Blake Lively.
Yeah, terrible Boston accent. But I was allowed to call her a broad because we were talking about The Town. It just felt right. Otherwise, I would call her an actress. Yeah. What do you think about this? What do you think about the sweatshirts?
I was going to call you out for that usage of broad. The sweatshirt was cool.
Yeah, I think it's weird to do it for such a B-plus movie, you know? But it's a popular sound on TikTok, so you got to do it because the youth are doing it. It's weird. It's bizarre. What I did like about this game, and it was just very intimidating for me as a Celtics fan, is Eric Spoelstra walking in, gold chain, sunglasses still on his shirt with the perfect tan. It was a strong look from Spo. He's probably been in the building for 3 hours, but he still had the sunglasses on his shirt, and the gold chain was popping, just shining in the light. It was just like, that's the best coach in the game, and he knows it.
He should. He's a brilliant man.
Did you enjoy any of the ice cream novelties at the dining area tonight?
No, I saw that there were Hootsie cups and such.
Hootsie cups, Chip Witch, Butterfinger bars. They had novelties galore.
I lifted today for the first time in a couple of months.
You didn't want to ruin the gains?
Didn't want to ruin it. It's time to get my fat ass back in shape. Sorry, Grandy. My fat butt.
There was an ice sculpture tonight for the Eastern Conference Finals. First time there's been an ice sculpture in the Garden since February, when there was randomly one for the Nets-Celtics game.
And
Jay King completely missed it.
I did miss it. It was in a weird spot. It wasn't in the same spot as it usually is.
Marcus Smart no longer has green hair. He pivoted to a braid system with blue beads on it. Your thoughts?
Obviously, they're 0-1 since the move.
It's a fair point. Maybe consider.
There are no wins in those shells. Did you say there were shells? I didn't see.
I said beads, but I believe they're shell beads. They're shell-based bead.
There were no wins in those beads.
There was a child's slam dunk contest, and they had Deuce Tatum be the judge. Your thoughts? I also like that I transitioned to the segment of me just yelling junk at you and then asking you your thoughts for it. I think it's the best way we can do it.
I didn't see the whole dunk contest. Did Deuce pick a worthy winner?
No.
Why was he not in the dunk contest? Because he dunked.
He dunked, but because normally they choose the dunk contest by crowd applause, and it's just unfair to put Deuce in that dunk contest. But I like the idea of him sitting back like in Gladiator and just like giving a thumbs up or a thumbs down to these other four-year-olds who are just trying to dunk. To be honest, I didn't track whether or not Deuce picked the right winner. He seemed much like his father, not ready for the moment tonight, especially in the fourth quarter, because I don't know if he really wanted to be on screen that much. But I thought it was an interesting.
He had a between the legs dunk. Give him some credit.
Deuce went through the legs?
Yeah.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, Deuce went through the legs and slammed it home.
Oh, well, shouts to Deuce then.
What do you mean he wasn't ready for the moment?
He wasn't ready to judge. Maybe he's not a judgmental guy.
Because he wanted to say, I won the damn thing. I put it between my legs.
He should have said that. I did like Al Horford hit a big three at some point in the second quarter and just did a squat for some reason. Did you notice that?
No, he did the timeout sign.
Well, did it while squatting?
Yes.
Well, why did he squat? He could do that from all elevations.
He just added some flair to it. Also, back to the dunk.
The Deuce dunk.
But then the dog dunked. The dog did a 360 dunk.
He didn't dunk.
The dog did a 360 dunk.
The dog didn't jump.
The dog still dunked. It's like Taco Fall could dunk without jumping.
All right, here's my big question. The name of the performance is this guy does acrobatic stuff, and then the dog like climbs on him, and there's thing. The name of the performance is Christian and Scooby. Big question is, which one's Christian and which one's Scooby?
The guy is Christian. The dog is Scooby.
That's where I lose all respect for him. I would have enjoyed the performance if the guy was named Scooby and the dog was named Christian. That's entertainment. That's subversive. That's art. What they did, run-of-the-mill nonsense. I didn't care for it one bit.
All right. What else you got for us?
Homicidal Jalen ruined a possession with there was phenomenal ball movement.
It was a beautiful
movement.
Possession.
It was such good ball movement, and he just could have gone up for the layup, and instead he tried to yam, and it was just it went the other way.
Jalen had some weird moments in this one.
He did. He took some bad threes. He made some bad decisions.
It was
he
not
fell
good...
down and made it seem like his elbow was in the most pain ever, and then it was completely fine after that.
After the game, he just sat there with an assistant coach just breaking down film for a while, which is very abnormal in the locker room, at least. But I guess he wanted to
just break
it all down right away.
At one point in the game, 2:46 left in the third quarter. Celtics are only down 5. Both teams had exactly 61 field goals. The Heat were 35 of 61. The Celtics 31 of 61. The Heat had made 2 more threes. The difference in that game, ipso facto, it was just the Heat's outrageous shooting is why they won the game. After that, the Celtics gave up a terrible 7-point run that, again, gets back to the point of playing like assholes at the start of the third quarter and the end of the third quarter. But at some point in the game, it was really just came down to the Heat were made more shots than the Celtics. Some would call it a make-or-miss lead. Some people who might call it that recently got fired from their job for being a bad basketball coach. But It's out there. That's all I got.
The Heat. I thought their offense was good.
Like they
generated a lot of good looks. I also think they made more shots than you'd expect them to make.
Well, yeah, they shot 54% from three, was it?
So they got 12 threes from those four players. I don't expect Gabe Vincent to hit three threes in a game.
How much?
I don't expect Kyle Lowry to hit multiple mid-range jump shots, or Gabe Vincent did multiple mid-range jump shots, like fading away from the paint.
How much time was left in the game when Jimmy hit that three from the corner when there was probably an illegal screen?
That was like five minutes left, where Caleb Martin basically body-checked Malcolm Brogdon and hit him to the ground?
Yeah, that was a pretty big play. As the Celtics were trying to come back. One other. I can't believe this didn't make your junk. Jason Tatum's continuation was one of the most outrageous things I've ever seen. I didn't see a replay. It was outrageous. 90. Even the Celtics bench was like looking around at each other like, was that actually continuation? That could not have possibly been continuation, right?
99% of the time, at least how it's been called this season, they're just point at the floor vigorously to let them know there's zero way there's continuation there. That should have made it, but it did not.
Incredible. Just an incredible continuation.
Oh, that didn't make my junk. I have in my notes. After that, Jason Tatum hit us with a finger gun celebration. And I think he's really upped his performative celebration techniques after going windmill in game 7. Now he's hitting us with finger guns. His prop game has been up significantly. It's like he went to mime school.
That was a terrible joke. Next.
That's all I got.
Maybe you should go to mime school so you can stop talking and then you won't have to say stupid jokes like that.
I honestly wasn't even like trying to joke. I was just trying to give you a good explanation for why his prop comedy had improved. I wasn't like buzzing. Like I wasn't like really proud of that one. It just kind of I say a lot of dumb things. I say a lot of smart things though. Last podcast, I said the difference between the Sixers and the Heat are that the Sixers are actually good. No. The Heat are actually good and they try. And so the Celtics will have to play better basketball than they did in game 1.
Yeah. Yeah. They are just got to play better defense. 46 points in one quarter is a lot.
It's a lot of points.
Lot of points.
All right, we've run out of no longer being informative or entertaining, so I think it's time to wrap up the podcast. We'll be back after game 2 to break it all down. He's El Nino, the kid, the god, the legend. I'm Sam Packard, professional sports fan. We are the hosts of Anything is Possible!
Just an incandescent podcast.